it's 11 o'clock, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. Maybe a few other people will join as we go. We're going to talk about today the section of the book on deliverance stories. The first podcast was about the origin stories. So this one's going to be about deliverance stories. So if you have the book and want to follow along, I'm going to pick up on page 35. And I'm just going to ask a couple of questions, and if people want to jump in with questions for me, that's great. Otherwise, I'm going to talk about deliverance stories. And one of the things that the first time I read the book did not resonate with me, but certainly is now, is the first question in the chapter: why is this night different from all other nights? Now, this is the first question in the Jewish Passover Seder. When you gather around a Passover table, if you're ever invited to a Jewish friend's Passover Seder, you get to, you sit around the table and you eat the dinner, and there are a series of ritual questions and ritual stories that are told. And one of the first questions is, why is this night different from all other nights? And the answer is, for the Passover, because this is the night that we remember that God rescued our forefathers from slavery in Egypt. But for us, that seems really... Hi, Jeanette. That seems really an important question. Why is this night different from all other nights? Or, since it's 11 o'clock in the morning, why is this day different from all other days? So, this day is different from all other days because we're all doing this kind of by the seat of our pants, and it seems like we don't know what's happening next. And that's kind of how the people of Israel, I think, must have felt at the time of the Passover and the deliverance from Egypt the first time. What's going to happen? What's going to happen with all of this? What's happening next? What's God going to do? What's up? So, you know, and then right after Passover, they head out into the wilderness. And that also has some real resonances, I think, for us today. What is it like to be in the wilderness? And one of the questions in the study guide is, have there been times in your life when God has made a way where there seems to be no way? Well, goodness, there certainly seems to be no way for a lot of us right now. Because we don't know what's coming next. We don't know where we're going. We don't know any of those things. So that's a really good question. We just don't know what's happening. And then the second question in the discussion guide is, do you find yourself in some kind of... of wilderness right now, and what what is that going to mean for us? So, Jeanette, I'm just muting you because I'm getting some feedback on your line. If you want to say something, just shoot me a hand up. So what kind of wildernesses are we in now? What kind of wildernesses are we in now? That seems a really ridiculous question to ask on the day of where we're all being told to stay in our homes and only go out for really important things and all that kind of stuff. We certainly feel, or at least I certainly feel, like we are in the wilderness. And so one of the things that... that the book talks about is how lots of people have felt like they're wandering in the wilderness, but that also she focuses a lot on justice and the way that those have been used. But I want to read a chunk of the book because I really like this part. There are few doctrines of the Christian faith more astounding to me than the incarnation. The remarkable notion that the God of the universe was once vulnerable as a fetus and hungry as a baby. Mary knew the humanity of Christ more intimately than anyone. From the moment that humanity manifested itself in the swelling of her breasts, a sudden sensitivity to heat and smell, that strange aversion to eggs, and the insatiable craving for lamb. The days were accomplished when she should be delivered. 2 millennia later, in the longest hours of my own unremarkable pregnancy, this little string of words from the Gospel of Luke invited me to press on and to fear not. It reminded me that whether it's a 40-year journey through the wilderness or a 40-week gestation, the most important tasks of life are accomplished a day at a time. Deliverance is as much a transformation of the heart as a transference of the body. And that last sentence is the one I want to focus on. Deliverance is as much a transformation of the heart as it is a transference of the body. And we're certainly there. The most important tasks of life are accomplished a day at a time. We're going to get through this time of isolation and of fear and of anxiety and of not knowing what's coming next a day at a time, knowing that God is with us. It seems really appropriate to me that it's Holy Week. We talk a lot in Holy Week. A lot of the images we use are connected with the Passover images and the time in the wilderness images from the story of the people of Israel. And while at Easter we do tend to focus on the great joyous day when they got released from Pharaoh and marched out of Egypt, there were 40 years of wandering around in the wilderness after that day, not knowing quite what it was God was going to do next, not knowing quite what it was that was going to happen next. And God delivered them not only from slavery in Egypt, but from uncertainty and from doubt and from fear and from not really knowing what's happening next. So that's what I'm going to offer you for this week, is remember that God is with us even in the wilderness times, even when it finds time to connect. And even if it's disorienting, that's what it's supposed to be. I want to read a little more, and this is a little bit longer chunk, I think it's worth reading. So settle in and listen. The wilderness, as both a geographic region and a literary motif, appears in so many Bible stories and poems. It functions a bit like a recurring musical theme, like the swelling strings from Lawrence of Arabia. Some biblical characters like Hagar and Jacob fled to the wilderness to escape troubled relationships or oppression. Others, like the people of Israel, were banished there as a part of God's discipline for sin. The prophet Elijah hid in the wilderness to escape political persecution, and Jesus retreated there to fast and pray in preparation for his public ministry. Yes, even God, when clothed with the vulnerability of a human body, spent time in the wild. In the Bible, the wilderness is a place of danger and desolation, creeping with wild animals and threatening with rugged, parched terrain. In life, it's that long journey through grief, those years between calls with your grown kid, a season of caregiving that stretches your reservoir of patience and perseverance, the aftermath of the divorce, the season of doubt, the period in between jobs or in relationships or in between the diagnosis and healing. In the wilderness, God can seem very far away or absent altogether. It may take weeks, months, or even years to get on track again. In the meantime, every well, every drop of manna, every raven bearing bread in its beak is salvation. New Testament scholar Walter Brueggemann said, like manna, God's wilderness presence is always enough on which to survive, but not too much. Like manna, he can be graciously received, but not stored or presumed upon. Like manna, it is given out of fidelity, but never fully seen and controlled. I like that bit about manna. God's wilderness presence is always enough on which to survive, but not too much. Like manna, he can be graciously received, but not stored or presumed upon. So as we go through this week, maybe keep that in mind, that God's presence with us will be enough. We can count that he will give us enough. But that the minute we try to store it up, like the manna in that story of the Israelites in the wilderness, it goes bad. Trust that God will give you enough of his presence for the day, and that all will be well today, and that our journey through this wilderness needs to happen one day at a time. I think that's really enough for today. Next week, we're going to meet again at 11, and we'll be talking about the war stories section, which begins on page 63 of the book. And the question to think about for next week that I'd like you to think about, because these are the hard ones, is if you could make one story or verse from the Bible disappear, which would it be? And maybe email that to me this week, the stories you would want to have disappear, and maybe we'll talk about those. I hope you all are staying safe. Let me know if there's anything that you need. Talk to you all soon. Goodbye.